Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire, and this is the official podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. Eric, we have big news today. Not earth-shattering, but big news. We have a new offensive coordinator, and lo and behold, the name was not on any of our lists last week.
Yeah. It's typical of the Lions, I guess, to pull something out of left field. They've done that a few times with other coaching hires, so I guess it shouldn't come
and as... And general manager hires.
Right. And well, yeah, I mean...
Matt Millen.
You don't have to go any farther than that. There you go. But...
And the Chuck Schmidt hire. We'll save that for another podcast.
But I think, I think the reason Bevel slid under the radar...
I apologize. Who is the new offensive coordinator? Darren Bevel... Mm-hmm. Former quarterback at the University of Wisconsin, is the new offensive coordinator.
Yeah, four-year starter at Wisconsin in the 90s.
Yeah, even led them to the first Rose Bowl since 1963 when they were in the early 90s. We've known them to go to many Rose Bowls since. Now, Eric, now you can drip all this information all over us.
Yeah, I guess we shouldn't have been surprised, because when you look at what he does, it fits right in with what Patricia said at his end-of-the-year conference, what Bob Quinn said about his end-of-the-year conference. I think the reason Bevel kind of slid under the radar is because he hasn't been getting a lot of other coaching interviews, and he hasn't coached for a year.
He did not coach this past season.
Yeah, he was fired.
And he wasn't on TV, as far as I know.
As far as I know, yeah, either. So he had time left on his contract. He was fired. He spent the year not coaching but still collecting a paycheck. And
mailbox money. You can't beat it.
Right. And so now the Lions, apparently behind closed doors, had contact with him, and then the move was made. So, when you look at it, when you take a step back and you look at what he's done in the style of offense that he runs, it makes a lot of sense. So there's a lot of tie-in. But, I think for the average fan and most first gut reactions are going to be kind of like, meh, or kind of uninspiring. Because with any fired coach, you typically, they've left on a sour note for one reason or another, right?
But for the most part in the NFL, the new axiom is every coach gets fired.
Yeah, right. And most of the time, it's for a cause, right? And sometimes it's not for cause. Sometimes, like, a coach will get fired because the coaches above him got fired, right? And it's not anything he did. It's just he was just part of the axe, right?
Collateral damage.
With Bevel, he was fired from Seattle in 2017 after they kind of bottomed out after having a lot of success for a few years. And he was
23rd in total offense in 2017.
Correct. But much higher in the prior years, which is we'll get into here in a second. But he, in a lot of ways, if you read the Seattle articles, was kind of like Seattle's, scapegoat. Was he there too long? Did he wear out his welcome? Had he grown like, stagnant in his offensive play calling? There's a lot of different things that there's of why he was ousted in Seattle, but it's what he does and what he has done for a long period of time. If he can dip back into that, there's some things that he's going to have on this Lions team that he didn't have in other stops down the road that should make for an interesting marriage.
All right, so he had two go-arounds with Favre, and he's had a go-around with Russell Wilson. So yeah, he's coached two of the better quarterbacks in the league. And
let me add to that before you
all right,
get
well,
too
I
far.
Was you had a cough there, so I was interjecting some information.
Well, let me add to that a Russell Wilson thing. Remember when Russell, he played at North Carolina, then shifted to Wisconsin, and then when he came out in the draft, what did everyone say? Oh, it's too small, right? They said, oh, he's a very accurate passer, but he's never going to be Drew Brees, And he people gave him like fourth round grades.
I didn't like Russell Wilson, but that was a bias. That was a Wisconsin bias.
Sure, right?
As a Michigan State fan.
And in most NFL draft communities, he was looked at as a guy who really wasn't worth investing in, right? But Bevel was the guy, and he's credited by Pete Carroll. Bevel is the guy who said, if you draft him for me, I can turn him into a starter. I can turn him into the guy that I want running my offense. And so Bevel gets credit for identifying him as the guy that could move them forward.
Interesting note, Pete Carroll let him do it, but didn't believe in him because they gave Matt Flynn a bunch of money to be the starter.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, they want he had an insurance policy for sure with in Matt Flynn, but he said
thanks to the Lions.
He called it Russell Wilson was a Bevel project, right? And that was the key term when he was drafted in Seattle. That's Bevel's project. He's going to work on Russell Wilson and see if he can turn him into something. So right off the bat, he's got an eye for talent, right? And while you don't need him identifying a quarterback with the Lions, there's some really positive things that you can get from him when you look back at his history. So let's kind of dive into that a little bit here and give our listeners a little bit more background on who Bevel is. So why does it make sense for the Lions? Well, as we've talked about in the past few episodes, they wanted a we had talked about the fact that a former OC made a lot of sense, right? Because they want to be able to hand the keys to the offense over to an experienced play caller so that Patricia can focus a little bit more on the defensive side of the ball. And so they did with Bevel, you've got a guy who was an OC for 12 years. Yeah. That's my fault.
Sorry for if you hear the paper at home, folks.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I've
keep going.
I got a lot of stuff going on right now. I got too many pants in the fire, guys. But okay, so he makes sense as an experienced play caller.
Did you say pants in the fire?
Pans.
Oh, I thought that would make you a liar, though, if your pants were on fire.
No, I think I'm still working through that cold.
Yeah, no, and it sounds like.
So from an offensive standpoint, he's a run first type of guy, right? And while he can call balanced offenses, and we've seen that with Russell Wilson in Seattle, he really prioritizes what he's going to do on the offense through the run game. So the run game is that priority. And if you listened to what, you know, like I said, at the end of the year stuff from the Lions
guys. It dovetails into what Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn said.
Exactly. Now, as far as in the passing game, he runs a more vertical passing game, which is, again, something that plays more into Stafford's wheelhouse. We talked about that as well, about how he is a guy who will take deeper shots and go for bigger plays, and that's something that really ties into the personnel they have on staff and a way that the Lions can succeed where they've struggled in the past. Let's see what else. He was 12, like I said earlier, 12 years as an offensive coordinator. He spent a lot of 5 years in the Vikings organization, and he spent 7 years in the Seahawks organization, offensive coordinator in both of those. As Joe pointed out before, he worked with Favre. One of those times he worked with Favre was with the Vikings in 2009, and the other time was before he was the Vikings offensive coordinator. He was the Packers
quarterback
coach, right? For 5 years, he was either the quarterback coach or the assistant quarterback coach, working with Favre for a long time. And he actually, that 2009 season with Favre was Favre's best year of his career. He ended up putting up numbers that he didn't normally do. He had a nice interception to touchdown ratio, 33-7, I believe. He was over 100 in his passer rating, which is something he didn't typically do. And then on top of that, we all know kind of what he's done with Russell Wilson over the last 7 years. Or, well, not 7 years. He had
seven, 8 years minus one.
Right. So, so in that time as an offensive coordinator, what we've seen from him is we've seen him have a run offense that has finished in the top 10 at least 8 of those 12 times. So we've talked last offseason, we've talked during the season about how if they're going to establish a run game, what do they need to do? And you bring in Davidson, You see a lot of the DVOA scores show the Lions go up from 32 into the 20 low 20s, like they were like 23 or something like that.
They got to make a leap from there.
And now they should. PFF put out some reports today talking about offensive line run blocking and pass blocking. And in run blocking, they were like 9th. In pass blocking, they were like 11th in the PFF scores as a collective unit. And so they're headed in that right direction. And they achieved this, you know, without TJ Lang as well. So now if you add in another right guard or you get TJ Lang healthy, the offensive line is headed in the right direction. You now have a offensive line coach who is teaching them the right things, and now you bring in an offensive coordinator who is focused on establishing the run. And you've got a rookie who just had a solid year in Kerryon Johnson, and things seem to be like kind of this is what they've been building towards. So this is how it all kind of meshes together. You want to say something like that?
Well, I mean, I have a couple of questions for you, but I don't think you're talking about the run game right now, so I'm not gonna butt in yet.
So let me keep going then. In their offenses, they've scored in the top 15 8 times. And when he was in Seattle, he scored, I believe, in the top 5. I don't know if they were all in Seattle. I take it back. I don't want to overstep here. But 5 times he had offenses in the top 5. So he puts together, while it is a run-first offense, he doesn't struggle to score. He's done well to be in the top half of the league as far as scoring offenses, which is really something that meshes well if the defense can turn around as well. You're going to need that pairing together. But from an offensive standpoint, I really feel like they're going to be focused on establishing that run. Now, he's had Marshawn Lynch in the past. He's had Adrian Peterson in the past. With Lynch, he had the number one rushing defense in 2014.
Rushing offense.
Thank you. Rushing offense in 2014. And so, I mean, he has been part of Seattle's Super Bowls. He went to the Super Bowl in 2000 after the 2013 season. They won. They beat Denver. And then after the 2014 season, they went back again, but then they lost to the Patriots.
We all know what happened there at the end.
And for those of you who don't know what Joe's talking about, that was the infamous Russell Wilson has the Seahawks on the half-yard line. They have 20 seconds left on the clock. They're ready to score.
The whole world thought the ball was going to Marshawn Lynch.
And so instead they decide to throw, and then Malcolm Butler picks it off. Side note, a Matt Patricia-led Patriots defense that picked him off. And so you now have these two coordinators from the 2015 Super Bowl. Exactly. United is one. And it's a neat little collaboration that they have here.
All right, I'm going to butt in with a question right here.
Go ahead.
We talked about this a little bit before we started the show. Daryl Bevel is the one who claims he made the call to throw that pass, to throw the pass instead of run the ball.
Yep.
Pete Carroll also takes, he dives on the grenade for Bevel, saying that he's the one who called the pass play. To me, that just sounds, you know, he's the general. He's the one who says, like, well, it's my call, and ultimately is, because if he didn't like that play call, he could have changed it all he wanted. Bevel made the call, and it was the wrong call. And it's easy to look back and say that it was one of those classic dumb calls. But now, does that give you pause at all? Does it only give you pause if the Lions end up in a high-leverage game? And he starts making play calls. Hey, this is something we should address.
Sure.
You know, because this is, like, I do know the fans of this team. I am a fan of this team. And I could be cynical a lot of the time. I'd also get a big laugh about when everybody takes everything to the extremes. Because tomorrow there's going to be a lot of talk about this. And there's going to be a lot of anger over this hire. And they're going to cite this play, which is a singular play, you know, in the timeline of NFL history. Although, you know, it's going to be a remembered one for a long, long time.
Sure. I think it's hard to put one play call on what was probably one of 12,000 that he made as an offensive coordinator. Because you've got, you know, X number of 70 plays a game, 16 games a year, 12 years as a coordinator. You're talking like 12,000 play calls. And while this was, you know, there's a lot of,
it's momentous. Well,
it's on the biggest stage. And
some moments are larger than others.
Right. Now, if it works, He's still
he's probably not fired yet.
Exactly. But he or Carol or whoever made the decision, and he was part of the team that agreed to this, and they decided to go for it. And you know, I don't hold that against him any more than I would hold that against Pete Carroll. You know what I mean?
I mean, I'm just preparing us for what we're going to end up hearing about. You know, there's going to be a lot of anger over the hire, and they're going to bring up this play. Sure. And, it's one play, and he screwed up, and maybe he learned something from it, and he wouldn't do something like that again. Mm-hmm. Maybe he wouldn't try to overthink everything and get cute. It's one moment in time, although some ring larger than others. All right, I got.
Well, let me ask you this: do you think he'd ever make that same call again?
Yeah. Well, I want to say no. Right. But there's a but to put on all of this. It's like, because what if he really starts overthinking himself? It's like, nobody's going to think that I'm going to do that same stupid thing. It's Homer Simpson logic. Nobody thinks I'm going to do the same stupid thing over again. So nobody's going to see it coming when I do it, you know, and try it again. I will note the Seattle offenses from 2011. In points scored. These are not advanced metrics. These are just straight-up point scores. 2011, they were 23rd. They went up to 9, went up to 8, down to 10, up to 4, down to 18. And the year he got fired, they were 11th. So for the most part, almost every five out of seven seasons, they were in the top half in the league. In fact, even better than that, in the top 11 of the league, which, you know, the roughly top 35% in the league. Mm-hmm. And with only a couple of years where they sat below the average for the league, that was just a fill in for what we were talking about earlier.
The big thing when it comes to bringing in a retread, because that's really what this is.
Bringing in retread, and you know me, I'm not a fan of retreads. Sure, but they're going to keep coming.
But that's how it works.
Yeah, that's how it works,
right? And when you have and for the Lions in this situation, we've talked about why a retread offensive coordinator makes sense, and so he. If you read the Seattle reports surrounding when he was fired, they all speak to the fact that, one, that play just loomed large over the top of him. And then, two, you can be with an organization for so long, and then it just kind of like you kind of run stale and you kind of run dry and things kind of run their course. And they say, like, it just seemed like he was kind of like, I don't want to use the word scapegoat, but that's... They basically said
it's everything. Got to be scapegoat. Jim Bob Cooter was a scapegoat.
Well, right. But they said everything but the word scapegoat in the articles that I've read. So, you know, we've got.
They try to be more classy on Seattle.
Sure. So while he's not a overly, like, jump out of your seat with excitement type of hire, they could have done much worse, you know? I think some of
Lions
the.
Lions are capable of anything.
Well, I'm saying.
Good and bad.
There's some offensive coordinators that were hired by other teams this year that I was happy signed somewhere else other than Detroit, and like for reasons X, Y, and Z. With Bevel, there are negatives, but there are also positives. You know, I think this does it gives us a clear picture of I think how we're going to approach the offseason. It speaks to the fact that they're probably going to prioritize a second running back. They're probably going to prioritize
speaking of the second running back, one
tight end. Yeah.
Do we have a question? Did anybody ask a question?
There's questions about running backs.
All right.
We'll dive into them a little bit more.
All right.
We do have a couple questions on the Bevel hire in general here.
Well, sure. We're going to get to those in a second.
Yeah.
Finish off what you were talking about, the tight end position.
Well, I'm just saying the tight end is also going – we knew it was going to be prioritized before. Now it's probably going to be even more prioritized. We had speculated getting a guy in the second round would be a big thing. Now it almost seems like a second round is a lock. In addition to possibly getting someone in free agency as well, other than just Toyolo. Maybe they bring Toyolo back, add a guy, and still draft one. I think the slot receiver maybe isn't as important. It'll get diminished a little bit, although it's not out of the realm that he can use it. You got to remember, he used to have a guy named Golden Tate on his offense, right? And Golden Golden wasn't as eccentric in that offense, but he was able to utilize him. He understands how to adapt to different players. But I think really the main focus from this hiring is that they're really going to start and try and run the ball down people's throats, which is, if you look at Bob Quinn's three-year plan, it seems kind of like he was heading in that direction little by little over the last couple of years.
It's worth noting, too, that in the NFL playoffs, in the 8 games that we've already seen played, there's been a lot of focus on running the football, even though these are very much pass-heavy teams.
There was not a 300-yard passing quarterback in the playoffs until the New England game.
Oh, jeez, what a mess.
Poor Chargers.
Phil.
Well, both Phil and Tom Brady went over 300 yards.
That's fine. I was just talking about how that game
started off. But prior to that, every game was under 300 because teams had gone to a run-focused offense in order to establish ball control. And honestly, I know the passing offense is the all the rage, and I know these exotic.
It's the rage, and it's the future.
Exactly, and it is.
Since it's technically a safer way to play the game. I mean, ask Alan Hearns from the Cowboys; he might have something different to say. But still, like it's more exciting and it's a safer way.
Sure,
to play football.
Sure, absolutely. But when it comes to December, and when it comes to the playoffs, you're going to need to have that run established. And so hopefully they can adapt to some of these new higher-flying offenses that are out there, but also they're really going to try and establish Kerryon Johnson and probably another guy as their workhorses.
Can we get to the Daryl Bevel questions?
Yeah, please.
All right, first from Doug Hartley. Could you give your opinion on how much his offense changed or didn't change between Minnesota and Seattle?
I think you can see it when you look at the numbers, right? When you look at his time with the Vikings, when he's running with Adrian Peterson as the guy, they have higher run success. But when Brett Favre came in, the run success dipped, and Favre ended up having a career year. In Seattle, before Russell Wilson, they were middle of the road in running. And then when they brought Russell in, they started running heavy for the first 3 or 4 years, and they were establishing their offenses with a heavy run-heavy attack and an accurate quarterback. But then as Russell evolved and they moved on from Marshawn Lynch, the running totals really dipped down into the 20s, and it became more about the Russell Wilson show. So he's able to adapt to his changing personnel, which is another key that Bob Quinn was looking for. But, you know, make no mistake, it sure seems like everything is pointing towards the Lions trying to be a run-first team here.
Daryl Bevel, question number 2, this time from Chris Robbins. What aspect of the Bevel hiring are you most looking forward to, and what do you expect will be the most positive thing that he'll bring to Detroit next season?
Well, I mean, it's got to be the run game, right? I mean, that seems to be the most positive and optimistic thing it's where he's had the most success. It's where the Lions have struggled the most, and it's the direction that the team is headed, or at least they want to be headed. So Kerryon is a special back, and I believe this is a good opportunity for him to do something. But he also showed that he can be injured, and that means you have to have another special back that you can go to. And that's really the rage now, right, is having multi-back tier systems. And while Kerryon is great, I wouldn't be surprised to see them try and hit either a running back high in free agency or get one in the draft that they feel like can really be an established, kind of running back number one, but B, as Kerryon is A.
Dustin Blackwell, is our pass offense going to look just as bad next year with Bevel? Please tell me why I shouldn't be worried about this. Dustin still should be concerned, but you answer his question.
Sure. I mean, look, whenever you're going to a run-first type offense, you're going to be concerned about the passing game. But Brett Favre had a career year when he was like 40, I want to say, or 41.
Well, that's Brett Favre.
I understand. But
an old gunslinger.
Right. But he had a career year with him. Russell has shown success in the and while I don't want to be like, I don't want to credit him for Russell's development, Russell's a talented player. the opportunity for Russell to evolve was there, and he identified the talent with Russell. So I do think Stafford is another talented quarterback that he will get a chance to look at, and I think his more vertical passing scheme will play more into Stafford's strengths. So I do think it will be a different passing game this year than it was last.
Joe Kenya asks, how are you going to feel tomorrow when you're watching the press conference? Now, I'll either be at work or driving home from work. I usually miss the press conferences. But you know at some point, Daryl Bevel's going to be standing up there, and he's going to say something along the lines of, Matt Stafford is just as talented as Russell Wilson and Brett Favre. He's not going to mince words. He's going to put him right in the category with them.
Of course.
Is that going to just, you know... Doesn't that bother you a little bit? Because it's the same old. You keep hearing the same old, you know?
Well, because what is he supposed to say?
Well, we know Matthew had a rough year. So you can't say Matt. We know Matthew had a rough year last year. It definitely wasn't the best. He'll even admit that he's had better seasons in the past. I'm here. We're going to work on it. He's got all the talent in the world, and we're going to make him better for next season. What's wrong with saying that?
Well, because he wasn't here. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't here to know the kind of season other than
he... Well, if he didn't coach last year. He wasn't on TV. Even if he was on TV, he probably would have had a lot more to say because he gets to watch all the games. I would assume now that the Lions have hired him into a football job, he has definitely paid attention to football in the last year. And watched a lot of different offenses play and try to take in as much as he can.
There's no benefit.
Like, why is there no benefit to
that? There's no benefit
for him. Goodwill to the fans.
Okay, but goodwill to the fans.
And I know the fans are meaningless. They don't matter.
Yes.
But
I for him, honestly, I don't want to say the fans don't matter to the coaches, but the fans don't matter to the coaches.
No, like, I know they don't. Like, it was very clear.
Patricia has... After every win, at some point in his post-game press conference, after every win, has spoke about how the crowd was really good, and so he's aware.
This is more nonsense, you have to say.
But that's look, man. That's any introductory press conference is going to be like that. It's going to be nonsense.
Sure, I don't know. I would just like to hear something more along the lines of the truth.
He's going to, but he's not going to want to start out.
I know nobody wants to tell the truth. It's not important.
He wants to start out on the right foot, and the way that he's going to start out on the right foot with Stafford, who he's going to prioritize over pretty much anyone else in that locker room, he's going to publicly say, He's the greatest quarterback I've ever played with. You know what I mean? Like, he's going to look. This shouldn't be surprising. Like, coaches
are
not
honest. I'm not saying it's surprising.
But coaches aren't.
I guessed exactly what Bevel's going to say.
Sure,
it's not surprising. It's just, you know, I don't know.
I just don't see the benefit for what he wants to do in the locker room or what he wants to accomplish with Stafford to say. He had a down year. I want to help him get better. It might win him, some fan awards, but that doesn't benefit him behind the doors, which is really what he really cares about.
But in the same argument, I don't see how it really hurts him behind those closed doors.
Well, maybe Stafford's sensitive. You know what I mean? Like, maybe Patricia's
a terrible thing. Isn't that a very bad thing?
I don't know. I don't think he is.
But you threw out. A theory,
sure.
And I'm not putting that on you that's your theory, but it's the answer you came up with. What if that is true? Isn't that a giant problem if that's true?
But I don't,
because they have to have a thick skin. They have to be able to handle, sure. You know, like.
And I think he does, but I'm saying first impressions go a long way.
He's going to talk to him behind closed doors. He's probably already been on the phone with him.
Yeah, but you know what, like. But it's different when it's in a press conference. Like, we have talked about how we have interacted with people mutually, and they have rubbed you the wrong way, or not me, or they've rubbed me the wrong way, and not... Yeah, right?
Sure. That's just because I'm a weirdo.
So am I. But those first impressions, they linger.
Sure,
And he needs to be able to... He's going to focus on the positive. And he's going to say, this is what they're doing great. This is what they're doing well. I think Kerryon Johnson is a Pro Bowler. I think Kerryon Johnson can be the next Adrian Peterson. He's going to... I mean, look, that's... He's That's what he's going to say. He's going to be like, this group, this offensive line looks like the most talented offensive line that I've seen. They're superiorly athletic, which is probably true compared to his offensive lines in the past. But he's going to focus on the positives publicly because there's no benefit to saying, you know, anything like, yeah, this area was bad. We need to improve.
Well, we should probably move on from this because I think I've just wasted everybody's time this argument. All right, Sean. Excellent point. Sean Claver's question. Question for the podcast. Do you expect any new coaching changes after this hire?
You know, it's very possible, right? You don't know if he wants a different tight ends coach or a different wide receivers coach. He may have a guy that he held on to previously that he wants to bring in and give a shot. There can also be existing coaches that get shifted around. For example, Dave Guglielmo, the Colts offensive line coach, who took the Colts from a 56 sack season in 2017. He came in, that was last in the NFL in 2017. He came in and he got them to only allow 18 sacks, which was first in the NFL. Major transformation.
Yeah, part created a very unfortunate graphic during the Colts' first playoff game, too, due to that stat.
Okay.
Check it out, everybody.
All right. he was a former Patriots offensive line coach, had very widely successful Patriots offensive lines in the past. He was just let go. So let's say the Lions are interested in him because they have ties to him from the past. He has had excellent success, but you've got Davidson who you like and you think has improved, but Googs is better. And so you want to bring Googs.
Is that
in.
What he's known as, Googs?
Yeah.
Now, why not DeGoogs?
Well, I don't know. This is
Googs is a better name.
I don't know his history, but I know they call him Googs, okay. Right? So,
like Tom Gugliotti, he was Googs.
If they bring Googs in, he honestly would be an upgrade to the offensive line coach, but you can't just shift from Davidson. And the fact that they're using Davidson in these interviews means that you're probably going to promote him to some other capacity, which means maybe you give him a title of run game coordinator or assistant head coach, which has been suggested to me by other people out there. And I really like those suggestions. I think I'm trying to remember who gave it to me. I'll figure it out before the podcast is over. And you know, you can shift guys around. So yeah, I do think there are some coaching changes that could be made internally. I don't know if it's necessarily going to be like, this guy's out, we're bringing in a new guy. I think it would be more of shifting people around and reallocating, you know, what their responsibilities are.
Lion for Life asks, how long does/should it take for a team to learn a new offensive system with the new offensive coordinator? Sadly, Lion for Life, we're going to be like 6 weeks into next season and we're still going to be hearing, well, it takes a long time to grow into the system.
You know, if it was a coach that had ties to what they're familiar with, right? We talked about, like, if Adam Gase came in, he runs a system similar to Cooter's, their transition wouldn't be that much. With this one, there's probably going to be some transition and it's going to take some time. Honestly, we won't know the answer, though, until training camp when we start seeing, you know, how they actually execute in practices.
All right, Mike Holloman has a question about the front office and coaching staff, basically just about the coaching staff. Have you heard anything about the special teams coordinator?
They have interviewed people. The known interview is Mike Prefer, who left.
Son of Chuck Prefer, former Lions special teams coach. Surprise, surprise, another coach's son, also becoming an NFL coach.
Prefer left the Vikings after his contract expired. They wanted to bring him back. He wanted to explore options. Interviewed with the Lions, ended up signing with the Browns. So it could be that the Lions are still exploring it, but we don't know. We don't have any names other than Prefer.
All right, important dates. Saweta Patel has a question. What are the most important dates this offseason? Like free agency, trades, franchise tags, and all that. So, junk. I'll put junk on the other.
So right now, the big issue that they can address today is Taylor Decker's fifth year. They can pick that up whenever they want. They can pick it up all the way for like the next like several months. But that's an option for them at any point. If they want to pick up, because he was drafted in the first round, they have that option to pick that up whenever they want. The next big decision comes Friday when all the college underclassmen declare. So we'll find out what 100 players are going to be eligible for the draft. Then the day after, on Saturday, they have both the East-West Shrine Game and the NFLPA games, which will give you a nice look at guys who will be drafted mostly on day three. Then a week from that is the Senior Bowl. That's when we're going to start seeing guys that are like day two guys, a couple first rounders are going to be in there. We'll start to see some more high-level talent in that game. After that, the next important date is franchising players. On February 19th, they are eligible to franchise players ahead of free agency, but that period ends on the 5th of March. The Combine starts on the 1st of March. Actually, that's not right. I said I have the 1st of March through the 4th of March. Let me look it up real fast. The Combine is actually the...
It's a much shorter event than a month long.
Yeah.
It's probably 3-1 through 3-4. Is that where that 4 comes from?
The Combine, yep, is 3-1 through 3-4. You got that right. And so that'll be a fun little Thursday through Sunday activity at the beginning of March. Then the next big event is a week after that when the free agency begins. The tampering period begins.
Best time of the year, the tampering period.
The allowed tampering period, the legal tampering period, right?
I like the illegal tampering period.
Well, that's everything before the 11th. But on the 11th...
It's going on currently.
Yeah, right. And on the 11th, they're allowed to legally tamper and start talking deals and stuff. The official signings begin 2 days later on the 13th. And then they're allowed to go through free agency for the next month or so. Leads right up until the NFL draft. And the NFL draft is on April 25th. Side note, April 25th in the area in which I live is Take Your Child to Work Day. So my four-year-old, who I normally will be watching on the first day of the draft, will be with my wife the entire day.
Hey, that's good news for you.
So I have a nice day there where I'll be able to answer questions and write articles, and pretty exciting moment for me.
All right, well, let's move let's move on to All-Star games. First, you want a note about the East-West Shrine Game. We got to kind of make this quick because we are fastly running out of time, as always.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of these questions we're going to have to hold because...
We did not know Daryl Bevel would show up today. Actually, we kind of did.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we did. Yeah, I was clued into it ahead of time. I was told they had their guy. I was told it would happen today. Unfortunately, it happened at 4, which was when I kind of expected. That's when they usually release all their big information. So, anyway, we'll get back to the All-Star game here. We just talked. I gave you a couple dates there. Jeff Risden is at the East-West Shrine Game right now. He is watching practices. He is interacting with Lions coaches and scouts, and he's getting an idea of guys that they're watching. And he's judging for himself and establishing like who fits and who doesn't. And he's got a lot going on right now, which is really cool. He's writing articles for us every day at Lions Wire. So over the next couple weeks, you're going to get some really cool insider information for them. He's written articles on Jimmy Moreland, who is a corner from James Madison. He clued me in a couple days ago on him. And so I took a look. He's got some really cool skills. He's a smaller corner, but he's really aggressive. 18 picks over his career, 6 of them he's taken to the house because he's really good at undercutting these routes.
Playmaker.
Very much. So he's a guy who I think Lions fans need to know. Lions have been in on him for a while, and so it's a cool name. He mentioned Brossette from LSU, the running back, as a late guy. Now that we know the Bevel hire, they might not be waiting until Brossette in order to add another back. They may be looking earlier, but you get an idea of kind of the guys they're looking at. They're looking for a bruiser here. They could also be looking for a speed option too. I think that's in the realm of possibilities, but there's some options.
JT Olson asks, who are some of your favorite prospects will be at the Senior Bowl that you think would fit well with the Lions?
So the Senior Bowl's practices start next week. look, these are the guys that are going on day one and day two. A lot of special talent here from an offensive standpoint. Now that we kind of know, you know, who the that Bevel is going to be in, as I mentioned earlier, running back is going to be important. Tight ends are going to be important. They're going to be guys that they're going to target. They're probably going to look at receivers. I don't know if a guy like Deebo Samuel is going to be maybe a little bit too rich for them, or maybe Emmanuel Hall, who's a fast guy out of Missouri. He could fit what they need, but I don't know, again, if they're willing to go after a receiver that early. Andy Isabella is a slot guy that is getting a lot of hype right now. He is someone that would kind of fit the what the Lions are missing. From a tight end perspective, most of the tight ends are that are at the top of the class are underclassmen, but the guy to keep an eye on is Dax Raymond out of Utah State. I think he fits that receiver mold that they're looking for out of a tight end. On the offensive line, they have almost all of the top talented guys. At the top of my board for the Lions are Dalton, Risner, Lindstrom. Those are the guys at the top. I think all of them will be at the Senior Bowl. From an edge perspective, I heard Josh Allen just withdrew, but there's still a lot of other guys like Charles Omenihu from Texas. I want to see how he compares to Zach Allen. Is there a big difference between them? Is there a gap between them and then Anthony Nelson from Iowa? From an off the ball linebacker type of position, there's not a lot of guys that really appeal to me. As far as, you know, being able to upgrade the unit, a guy like Chad Hansen out of Utah, who's more of a cover linebacker, a little bit undersized, kind of in that Miles Killebrew role, I'd be interested to see if they would use him as kind of a special teamer and develop into a reserve. From a cornerback perspective, again, a lot of underclassmen at the top of the list, but the seniors that are there, Rocky Sin is a guy out of Temple. And a six-footer. I want to see if he can, you know, move towards the top of the senior class here. And the same thing is true with the safeties. The big thing with the safeties in this class, there's only a couple free safeties, a lot of hang defenders. Nasir Adderley out of Delaware is probably one of the top guys in this class. And so I think he's a guy who, if they're going to keep Tracy Walker at free safety, Adderley could be a sleeper day two pick for them, where he could come in and be that upgrade to Tavon Wilson in that slot safety role.
All right, roster questions. Samson Tuon Mixer. Is there a way to dissect Stafford's interceptions, like how many on him versus wrong routes, poor route running? I think it would be hard to decipher because we don't know the playbook. Thoughts?
You know, you can get a PFF subscription because they kind of do some of that stuff, but there's not a lot that we can do, unfortunately, to decipher that.
Hail Mary, are you confident that the improvements made on the defense will carry over to next season? Do you feel confident about building an offense around our franchise quarterback?
I think the defense can definitely improve. I think experience goes with that. I think as they add talent, that'll help improve that defense as well. This offense is going to be really unique to see how they build it. I do think they're going to add pieces. I don't know if they're going to be building necessarily around Stafford as much as they're just going to be trying to add more playmakers, which should inevitably help him.
Storm Gypsy, is Crosby ready to be a starter?
I think so. I think he was ready last year. I think he's definitely ready this year. I think he should be in the mix at right guard.
Now for a couple of draft questions. Neef asks, what trade would you take if you're Bob Quinn for our first rounder, since Bob Quinn has been open to trading down?
It's really tough because you at eight, they're in a really good spot to add an elite edge guy. I don't know if trading down would afford them that ability to get a top guy. If you're targeting like a tight end, let's say, in the first round, you could trade into the teens and probably still land them. It's we have to see what happens in free agency before we can really identify who they might be targeting.
Brandon Kerr, would you trade a third or second round draft pick for an accomplished player rather than to try to draft one? I'm not talking about AB. Some teams are changing schemes and some players are going to be out of place.
I wouldn't trade a second or a third round pick.
Antonio Bryant.
Yeah. I would I think trading third round picks are, I'm sorry, third day picks are on the table. I don't think any of the day two picks are. I think Bob Quinn has proven the ability to hit on second and third rounders consistently, that he wouldn't give up those that valuable commodity there.
Chris Robbins, I've been seeing Cody Ford get some top 10 hype lately. All three guys at Draft Network love him, and Stick to Football Pod guys are huge fans. What would be your reaction to a guard at number 8 if Lang leaves?
So Cody Ford is a right tackle at Oklahoma, and he has some pretty elite talent. But if you're going in the top 10, you're not taking a right tackle that's converting to guard. You're drafting like a Quinn and Nelson type guy, right?
Dominant guard or a top-notch tackle.
And he's not that. So, no, I don't think there's an offensive lineman that's worth a top 10 pick. I know he's a good talent. I think he's a first-round talent. He's not a top 10 talent.
Daniel Reese, who's a player in the third round that the Lions might reach for, a la Kenny Galladay and Tracy Walker?
This is a hard one because it's so early in the process, but a couple of names that I've heard that people, you know, are maybe haven't talked about much. I mentioned Moreland before, the cornerback out of James Madison that Jeff pointed to. He's a guy who could end up being kind of a sneaky guy that ends up in the third round. Cornerbacks tend to do that. Another one is Anthony Rafe Williams, a wide receiver from North Carolina, who's a wide receiver, slot receiver, kick returner, former quarterback. The word is he's got Devontae Adams type upside, but he's a little bit raw. He could be a guy like Galladay that they take a flyer on.
Who are some of your favorite day two players the Lions would have interest in?
You know what? Again, it's really early. I got a lot of guys on my list. I haven't quite narrowed them down yet.
Between the Numbers asks, Bob Quinn made it clear that tight end was a high priority last offseason, and up to the trade line referencing he targeted top tight ends.
Yeah.
Knowing Gronk was a target, Bob Quinn means top tight ends, not the Cameron Braid or Jared Cook of the world.
Yeah.
What top tight ends could be available this offseason via trade?
I have looked at this tight end class extensively, and I have no idea who he was really going after. It's not someone that's on my radar. I went and looked at it again today, and I still can't really pinpoint it. Randall Ferguson also asked a question about Clay and Brate as being guys with not a lot of guaranteed money that maybe Quinn might offer a sixth or seventh rounder on. That makes sense to me. They're not top guys. I don't know a top guy that they would go after, but this draft class is loaded with tight ends, and I would not be surprised to see them, you know, maybe add a guy like Brate and then go after a top tight end like T.J. Hockenson or something like that.
Eric J. Mawson. Mawson. Yeah. Eric question, which is from Eric M. to Eric S. about Eric E. Did Ebron have to move on to get better? Gut feel is he needed a change of scenery and fresh start to improve, but still think Quinn did not maximize value letting him go.
Yeah, you know, Quinn, his goal was to extend, or he picked up the option, the fifth-year option on Ebron, and then his goal was to trade him, and he couldn't find someone to trade him, so he had to cut him because he didn't want him here in Detroit. So I don't think Quinn got the maximum value for that. I think he even said as much. And I do think Ebron probably needed a change of scenery. It's just one of those situations that just wasn't working. I think it is a black mark on Quinn's record. I think he tried. It just didn't work out.
Tight end draft class looks good and deep this year. Did it factor into letting Ebron go?
I don't think it did. I think the Ebron situation was isolated.
Which are the differences between the Iowa tight end coming out, Noah Fant, and T.J. Hockenson, and might one be available at second or third round pick? Tight ends do you think are good fits for the Lions?
There's a lot of tight ends that will fit, but as far as Fant and Hockenson, Fant is more of a pass catching receiver, tight end, whereas Hockenson is more of a balanced guy who can block and receive. Fant is going to be more your electric kind of guy. So I think Fant could slide. I don't think Hockenson will. I think everything that I keep reading on Hockenson and from what I hear from other people is Hockenson might end up being the top tight end in this class.
Bob Quinn had a good 2018 draft, quality through all the picks.
Yes.
Is he getting better or lucky? Getting better because he knows Patricia well and finding the players that fit, or has scouting staff improved?
I think the scouting staff has improved since previous regimes, but it's also he's been drafting for Patricia's system for 15 years in New England. Then he came here and he was trying to do find players for Caldwell, and it didn't work. Now he's back to Patricia with what he's familiar with, and so it makes it easier for him to land guys that he can.
All right, we're going to ask. We have very little time.
We can save a lot of these.
Free agency questions. I'm going to ask two of the quick ones. Brandon Kerr, are the Lions in competition now for players for the new coaching staff that is going into Miami?
Yeah, and Tennessee. And as these more and more New England coordinators get hired, it's going to be more people that fit what the Lions are looking to do.
Now I'm going to go down to Jeff Hooker. What free agent running backs might the Lions sign? Marshawn Lynch question.
I think he added the Marshawn in as a joke, but I don't think they'd try and trade for Marshawn. But a Seattle running mate, Mike Davis, is a guy who was with Bevel in 2017. He was Seattle's number two this year. They're expected to move on from him as they drafted Penny last year. So Davidson will be on the free agent market. Another Bevel guy, Adrian Peterson, will be on the free agent market.
That's what I was waiting to hear.
I don't think Peterson will be the guy.
No, probably.
But both both Peterson and Davis graded high out on PFF this year. They are guys that could be complements to Kerryon Johnson. But there's other guys out there that I like. I think there's a handful of free agents. Don't be surprised if they try and bring home local boy Mark Ingram.
All right. I'm going to say that's all we have time for today, so let's do the podcast shout-outs.
Yeah. We got three more reviews, and I know that we got more ratings because the ratings
went up. It's been a ratings bonanza.
Yeah. The ratings are up to 120 now.
Yeah, which is wild.
Fantastic. So Rudy TR, a Poop Guy 69, and a Joe Free. Free, is that right?
Yeah, F-R-I-E? I would say that's Fry. Could be Fry.
Fry,
could
Free.
Be Free. I read it as like Brie cheese.
Yeah, oh, there you go.
So Free, sure.
Yeah. All said nice things about us, gave us written reviews. And like I said, we saw other five-star ratings as well, which is
keep them pouring
terrific.
In. Thank you.
There's other podcasts that are popping up right now in Lions World, and so
it's a Shark Tank out here.
And so we like to stay stay relevant, and those ratings help.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And on those remarks, we apologize. We made a lot of noise. We're scrambling today. The computer was banging around. We probably called him Darren Bevel like three times instead of Daryl Bevel. We know his name. Sometimes, you know, things get a little away from us. You know?
Yeah,
we're trying to deliver the best Lions news we can.
I'm holding on to the questions that I didn't get to, guys. We still have some end of the year review stuff. Maybe we can get to. Maybe we can start doing that a little bit next week. But
sure.
The questions
they stunk. There we go. We reviewed it.
I'd like to do some position by position breakdowns. Maybe we'll start with offense now that we have Bevel in the fold here. But the questions keep pouring in, and we love them. We like to get to what we can as much as we can.
Yeah, we'd love to answer every question on every show.
As much as best.
Today was not one of those days.
Yeah, we're short about six or seven of these.
It's all right. It gives everybody a reason to listen next week to see if their question's answered. So until next week, we want to thank you all for listening and enjoy the playoffs this weekend. And until next time, let's go Lions.